Sit still. We have temporarily taken over your motion picture screens to bring you the following message.
You're doomed!
To another episode of the We're Not Normal podcast. This is everybody.
See? What's you just up? Copied from last time. Why didn't you choose a different one?
What? Oh, you mean like a different sound? Mm-hmm. What's this one?
Well, that is a different sound.
Right near the button that I pressed the last time.
Yeah.
Or I could actually go with like a short.
No, we can get on with the program.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right. Hopefully everybody is having a great week. We're back with another. What happened?
It's the weekend.
Oh, yeah. And it's the weekend. Still Ghostober. You know, we're still rocking with Ghostober.
Yes.
Getting ready for Halloween. Hopefully you guys got your skeletons up. You got your pumpkins carved and up in the front porch so it could sit all the way until that bitch is rotten. Hopefully, yeah, it'll be a great, great day for treats and all that. Can't wait to get my hands on some of those, like, Reese's Cups and Snickers bars. What's your favorite, treat, Cassie?
Strawberry shortcakes.
I don't think you're gonna find that in, like, a Halloween.
That's why I'm not going.
I mean, candy, sorry, not a treat, but, like, a...
treating. Because then nobody's gonna give me a strawberry shortcake, I'm not going.
I mean, that would be something different, though, somebody having the strawberry shortcakes in, like, the packages and Halloween bowl.
I'm sure they have them. Like, is it, like, a hostess type thing?
There's got to be somebody that's different for out sure. there. So, this episode, we are going to be covering Los Feliz. Now, Los Feliz is a neighborhood in Los Angeles, California. I almost forgot where Los Angeles was.
I know, really? I saw you look at me like I was, like you were lost. I was like, what the hell?
I was about to ask you, wait, where's Los Angeles again, babe? Where's Los Angeles?
Don't know.
Oh, that is what you wait.
I forgot.
Oh, yeah. We're,
it's West Side.
Oh, so, okay, so it is on the west side, so it's not on the east side. No, I'm just, all right, I'm just playing right now.
Oh, my God. Too much.
So apparently, Los Feliz is a haunted town. It's got, you know, like haunted stories all over the place, you know, including the Manson family murders happened here. Family
oh,
killers,
really?
Yeah.
I know that it happened. I just wasn't sure where.
Oh, what where, area it happened?
Yeah, but I don't remember. Yeah.
So. This neighborhood is actually just east of the Hollywood sign, the famous Hollywood sign. And I think one of the mansions there where a dude murdered his wife and daughter. Ghost Adventures has covered this. I forgot the dude's name, but there's a mansion, mansion murders. That mansion is actually just below the house that they used for House on a Haunted Hill. Remember that movie?
Yeah, it's located just below it. Right?
Just below it, yeah.
Right.
Anyway, so Los Feliz isn't just a bustling, friendly Vermont, charming Spanish stucco homes.
What?
Stucco? Spanish stucco?
Oh.
S-T-U-C-C-O. Here we go again.
Done with you.
And the wonders of Griffith Park. So the popular Los Angeles neighborhood, just to the east of the Hollywood sign, has also been the stomping ground of specters and spirits and evil Manson family killers. Few neighborhoods in Los Angeles have a more ghoulish history, and it all started with a cheating scandal in the 1830s. So here we go.
Yeah.
Here's some ghost stories.
Yeah.
Murder on the Rancho. The modern story of Los Feliz starts in the 1790s. Sorry. Excuse me. Jose Jose Vicente Feliz, a soldier and government
Bless
official.
You.
Whoop. Oh, I thought I heard a sneeze. Sorry. Bless you. There we go. A soldier and government official who had once served as the de facto mayor or little father of the new pueblo of Los Angeles was granted 6,677 acres, so 6,677 acres of ranch land outside of the pueblo called Rancho Los Feliz, or the Happy Farm. It prospered due to its inexhaustible supplies of lumber, water, and game. After Jose Vicente's death, his heirs continued to operate and live on the rancho. It was an important gathering place for rural neighbors and those traveling to Los Angeles, and played a crucial role in local events, including the annual Christmas pageant. Ooh, sounds fancy. This tranquil, communal way of life was shattered in 1836 by a murder that rocked the pueblo to its core. Domingo Feliz, part owner of the rancho, had married a much younger, vivacious woman named Maria del Rosario Villa. That's a lot of long names.
So Spanish people roll.
Oh, really?
So.
I didn't even know that was a thing. That was, So bored by her husband, Maria began an affair with Gervasio Alispaz. Gervasio Alispaz. Oh. He must have been spazzing. No, I'm just.
Never guess it. I cannot deal with
it. So he was a suave, disreputable vaquero. Whatever that means. She ran away from the comforts of Rancho Los Feliz to live with her lover, causing a scandal in tight-knit, very Catholic Los Angeles. So according to Mike Eberts, author of Griffith Park, A Centennial History, 2 years later, Domingo ran into his estranged wife and her paramour at a fiesta at the Mission San Gabriel. He took the opportunity to have Maria arrested and brought back to Rancho Los Feliz. Maria quickly escaped back to Los Angeles, and went to plead her case to the mayor. He encouraged her to be the dutiful wife, and Maria seemed to change her tune, agreeing to go back home with her husband. Domingo put her on his horse, and the two rode off together, happily in the sunset.
Oh, my God.
I just added that last part.
I gotcha.
So as the couple was approaching home, tragedy struck. Though accounts vary, most agree that Gervasio appeared from the tall oaks on the edge of the rancho. Gervasio attacked, pulling Domingo from the horse. As Maria cried for him to stab her husband, he did just that. Wow. Cold-blooded!
And psycho. Yeah.
After Domingo was dead, the lovers rolled him into a ravine and covered him with fallen leaves. Damn. They didn't even, put him in a proper grave. They just They just threw them under leaves.
That's what they did to, you know, back in the days. If you did something bad, do you think they did you proper?
No. They just... Oh.
So, yeah.
Domingo's body was found within 2 days, and Maria and Gervasio were quickly arrested. The murder caused an uproar in the small pueblo of Los Angeles. A citizens commission called the Junta Defensora, so it must be Justice Defense or some shit like that in Spanish, was formed to exact quick, brutal justice. They sent an extraordinary petition to city officials, which read in part, "We demand of you that you execute or deliver us for immediate execution the assassin Gervasio Alispaz and the unfaithful Maria del Rosario Villa, his accomplice. Nature trembles at the sight of these venomous reptiles, and the soil turns barren in its refusal to support their detestable existence." Wow.
That was intense, yeah.
"Let the infernal pair perish. It is the will of the people. We will not lay down on our arms. We will not lay down our arms until our petition is granted and the murders are executed."
Dude, that's insane.
Oh, damn.
Mm-hmm.
They did not give a fuck about, like, the, you know, about the how the death penalty is. What's that word? It's stigmatized. Not stigma. It's like, like there's like pretty much people that don't agree with the death penalty. But there are like instances where, yeah, you gotta kill that motherfucker.
Uh-huh.
But there's disagreements upon people where the death penalty should be enforced or should be. But yeah, I guess, I mean, like,
yeah,
in this situation,
yeah,
these people definitely did it, and then the style that it happened,
yeah,
I guess, yeah, the death penalty is, yeah, pretty much agreed on. So, unsatisfied with the official response, the Junta Defensora took matters into their own hands. The lovers were forcibly removed from their cells, killed by firing squad, and dumped in front of the city jail.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
The junta disbanded days later, and so ended, one historian wrote, "The only instance in the 75 years of Spanish and Mexican rule in California of the people, by popular tribunal, taking the administration of justice out of the hands of the legally constituted authorities." So, all that,
mm-hmm,
here is said to be the curse. Life at Rancho Los Feliz went on. During the 1860s, much of the rancho was owned by Don Antonio Feliz, a bachelor who lived a quiet life in the ranch's main adobe. He was considered a very rich man, as the ranch was well watered by the river and was productive. He had no children, but a niece named, wow, Petronella, had been reared like a daughter and was the apple of his eye. In 1863, Don Antonio contracted a fatal case of smallpox. According to Los Angeles Pioneer and noted fabulist Major Horace Bell, author of the quasi-history on the Old West Coast, this illness would set into action a curse that grips Los Feliz and Griff Park to this day. Oh, so he starts the curse. Okay. According to Bell, Petronella was sent to Los Angeles to escape the smallpox outbreak. While she was gone, vultures in the form of Antonio's good friend Antonio Coronel and a lawyer named Don... Wow, these so much the last names. Inocanti. Whatever. I think I... God. Visited the dying man at his adobe. They manipulated him into changing his will, leaving the Rancho not to the clever and strong-willed Petronella, but to Coronel. All right. So Don Antonio died soon after, and Petronella discovered that she had been cut out of her beloved uncle's will. She unleashed a curse on Colonel Don Incosanti and the land her family had owned for generations. Your falsity shall be your ruin. The substance of the Felice family shall be your curse. The lawyer that assisted you in your infamy and the judge shall fall beneath the same curse. And she continued, the one shall die an ultimately death, untimely death, I'm sorry, and other in blood and violence. A blight shall fall on this terrestrial paradise. The cattle shall sicken. The field shall no longer respond to the tiller. I see a great flood spreading destruction. I see the grand oaks wither in the tongues of flames. The wrath of heaven and the vengeance of hell shall fall upon this place. I don't think people nowadays would like be so articulate in a hatred that they would have against a person. Do you think that?
Yeah.
Oh, somebody would be.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, definitely. For sure?
For sure. For sure. I feel like everybody has a little hate inside of them for something. Something, you know, there's something in all of us where we get irritated, so irritated with something. So, oh yeah, for sure. For sure. They just hold it in. They smile on your face and they walk away. And they go to their house and they talk shit. Oh yeah, for sure. Don't you think so?
But as articulate as that, like going toward the person that they want to make sure that that person, I mean, I guess like maybe nowadays it would probably be in the form of a
shooting. Face.
Not shoot. I'm saying worded like these are like college level words right here put in a sentence. So I don't see a Facebook post being worded like this.
No, it would be like, a lot of.
Like, blight shall fall on this terrestrial paradise.
The cattle shall sicken. I don't know if that's really what happened. What was really said. Yeah, that's pretty English teacher type. Yeah.
So, I mean, people back then were said to be more fancy and articulate with their words back then than nowadays.
Yeah, so instead of saying, okay, so give me a line. Throw a line at me.
Right here?
Yeah, say what they're saying.
Okay, so.
And you say what they're saying, and I'll tell you what they would say now.
All right, I'll start from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
The one shall die an untimely death, and the other in blood and violence.
I'm going to kill you, and then I'm going to kill your motherfucking friend.
A blight shall fall on this terrestrial paradise.
Say it one more time.
A blight shall fall on this terrestrial paradise.
A meteor is going to hit us and hopefully crash everybody.
The cattle shall sicken.
Cattle's going to fucking die.
The field shall no longer respond to the tiller.
I'm going to curse this world, or that way, or I'm going to put something, I'm trying to think of, I'm going to put some toxic all over the farmer's land.
I see a great flood spreading the destruction.
Tsunami. Tsunami's coming.
I see grand oaks, so oaks to be in trees, wither in the tongues of flames.
Trees dying. Trees are fucking going to be set on fire.
I'm going to burn this bitch down.
Yeah, pretty much.
The wrath of heaven and the vengeance of hell shall fall upon this place.
God and the devil are going to work together and punish all of us.
Okay, yeah.
Something like that. Something like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it can be done. Just not as...
Not as articulate as the... Oh, boy. All right. So it is said that this curse went into effect almost immediately.
Ugh.
So the Don dude, he was like soon killed, and the others involved in the swindle, you know, the coroner, met financial and physical misfortune.
Wow.
The cursed land was quickly sold to a man named Leon Baldwin, who found the once fertile rancho overrun by grasshoppers who ate all the crops, causing all the cattle to die.
Yeah. That's another way to get rid of the farmland is, you know, crickets or grasshoppers, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Or would it be locusts? Are locusts and grasshoppers the same thing?
I don't know. I think something close to that.
Baldwin, the dude that just bought the land, was later killed by an outlaw.
I wonder if he's related to Alec Baldwin.
That's pretty interesting.
Right?
The rancho was then sold to a man named Thomas Bell, who would soon unload it on its most famous owner and current ghost, Griffith J. Griffith. So, what? Griffith J. Griffith?
His last name is his first name?
His first name is his last name, and his last name is his first name.
So sad.
You know what it would have been even better?
Wow.
Like, if his middle name was also Griffith?
Oh, my God. That would have been too many Griffiths.
So, Griffith.
I would have just been like, what up, G?
What up, GGG?
What up, Triple G?
What up, my GGG?
Jeez.
Ghost of Griffith Park. Welshman Griffith J. Griffith was a, or I'll just call him GJG or GGG.
There you go.
Or JGG.
JGG?
GGG. GJG.
Yeah.
Was a self-made millionaire and bombastic.
Mr. Boombastic.
Ellie Fantastic. Oh, Mr. Lover Lover. No, oh, my God.
That's crazy that's how it came into our head.
Yeah. Self-promoter. So he's a bombastic self-promoter whom Horace Bell contemptuously referred to as the Prince of Wales. Wales! After buying the old rancho for a steal, he set about turning it into a profitable farm. But soon after its purchase, a great flood wiped out the crops and sent waves of water rushing through the canyons. Mm. What the f-
Tsunami.
Tsunami. Legend has it that workers saw both the Don dude and Petronella's ghost riding on the waves, laughing at the rancho's misfortune. So wait, Petronella's cool with the Don dude in the afterlife? They're both laughing.
They're homies.
When her uncle died, she's the one that cursed the Don dude. And then she ended up dying in the misfortune as well. So she got killed by, she got by her own curse.
You know? What is that, karma? That's with the capital
K.
Yeah.
Or a capital C.
Whatever.
I'm a cap.
We are horrible.
Just a man. Yeah, that's crazy. So the workers on the ranch, terrified of the curse, they refused to be on the property after nightfall. Griffith himself would not spend the night on the ranch. Struck with land on which nothing would grow and no one would go, Griffith decided in 1896 to donate the land to the city for use as a public park. At a banquet held to celebrate the gift, city officials and Griffith gathered in the old Felisa dope, drinking and partying. So at the stroke of midnight...
See, they even used to do that back in the days, just drink and party. That's it.
And party and bullshit. No,
yeah.
Stroke of midnight, they were visited by an uninvited guest, the ghost of Don Antonio Feliz. Senores, I am Antonio Feliz.
Mm-hmm.
Come to invite you to dine with me in hell. Senora.
Wow. No. Wowzer.
With his the big mustache or whatever that they have nowadays. So, in your great honor, I have brought an escort of sub-demons. Ooh, he brought some homies. The homies. So the lights suddenly went out and the guests went out as suddenly. They kept right on going until safe at home. Yeah, that would scare the shit out of me, too.
Hell yeah.
In 1903, the curse was blamed when a temporarily insane Griffith convinced his wife was conspiring against him. Shot her in the face at the Arcadia Hotel in Santa Monica. She lived, by the way.
Oh, my. And stuck with that. You know, actually, that's not the first time someone's been shot in the face and then lived.
There's some rare occurrences, I think.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's
usually a one and done type of thing.
Yeah, true. But it would suck to have to live like that, too.
Yeah. So today, the disgraced Griffith is said to haunt the park, along with Don Antonio and Petronella. She had been seen at Felice Adobe at Crystal Springs staring out the window at night, riding a white horse, and in the face of B-Rock above the old zoo. Numerous other ghosts have been reported in the park. It is said strange animal noises can be heard near the old zoo at midnight. There is a ghost of the tragic Peg Entwistle, the actress who jumped to her death from the Hollywood sign in 1932.
Wow.
She is said to roam beneath the landmark, her signature gardenia perfume trailing behind her.
That's crazy, dude.
Jeez.
Craziness.
And that's a high motherfucking sign. I only seen it on TV, but that sign looks pretty big. All the words of Hollywood. Is it still Hollywoodland or does it just say Hollywood?
I think it just says Hollywood.
Huh.
Why does it say Hollywoodland there?
Yeah, there's a picture of 1932.
I think it's just Hollywood. Yeah, I think it's just Hollywood.
Okay.
But I'm not 100%.
The curse is said to have...
I've never been to that part.
The curse is said to have been the cause of a devastating fire that killed 29 untrained firefighters in Mineral Wells Canyon in 1933. There is the supposedly haunted picnic table, where it is rumored
that... The picnic table's haunted?
Yeah.
Because somebody killed the picnic table? I guess you would, huh? Because you have to cut down the tree to make the picnic table. Oh, another tree's haunting everybody. That makes sense.
Oh, I thought you said you meant like somebody ate the picnic table.
No, somebody had to kill a tree
mm-hmm.
to make the table, right?
Yeah. So the tree was haunted. Damn.
Mother Nature getting back at everybody.
Damn.
They're going to be mad at all the toilet paper we used.
Oh, shit. Hold up.
Hold up.
So it was rumored that two lovers were crushed by a falling tree branch mid-hookup.
See, told you.
Damn.
Tree getting back. Mother Nature getting back at people for the picnic table.
So it wasn't even after. It was mid-hookup. Yo.
Gregory. Oh, my God. Really? You're disgusting.
So that, like, oh, man. All right, fuck it. I'm just going to say, like, he was...
You don't need to say it.
All right.
Thank you.
So, damn. That's,
we got it.
That was a lot of wood involved, pretty much. Okay. All right, I got it out. Where it was... Okay. And the ghost of a man, perhaps Walt Disney, who climbs the steps around the merry-go-round. Okay. All right. And what of all a curse is said to be the cause of it all? It's probably total bull. The exaggerations of Horace Bell's overactive imagination. In Horace Bell's fanciful account, Petronella died on the spot of grief after delivering her curse. According to historians, she lived to the age of 92. And Antonio Coronel did not really cheat Felice out of his land, but purchased it later for $1 an acre. That's pretty fucking cheap.
Yeah.
$1 an acre?
I would go get some land right now if that was the case. Who's got land for $1 an acre? Let me know.
So the Soden House. Does the probable bogus curse still damn the modern-day neighborhood of Los Feliz? The brutal murders purported to have been taken place there may lead to one to believe it does. Built in 1926 for John and Ruth Soden, the Mayan Revival Soden House on Franklin Avenue has gained prominence not only for its unique architectural design by Lloyd Wright, but for its alleged ties to the infamous Black Dahlia. During the 1940s, the home was occupied by Dr. George Hodel, his ex-wife Doro, and their children. While Hodel hosted decadent, depraved parties for friends such as Man Ray and John Huston.
Man Ray was on there?
Yeah, Man Ray was.
From SpongeBob?
No. I don't know.
Is his name Man Ray?
Yeah, just Man and Ray.
Oh, Man Ray from SpongeBob was there.
So his son Steve recalls the home as a child's dark wonderland. Once through the gate, you turned immediately to your right and continued up a dark passageway. Then made another right turn to the front door. It was like entering a cave with secret stone tunnels, within which only the initiated could feel comfortable. Growing up in that house, my brothers and I saw it as a place of magic that we were convinced could easily have greeted the uninvited with pits of fire, poison darts, deadly snakes, or even a giant sword-bearing turban bodyguard at the door. Oh yeah, you remember this house, right? This is a crazy-looking house.
Oh, I think it's beautiful.
It is definitely unique.
That's me. That's all me.
Yeah. Steve's sister, the home was a nightmare place where very bad things happened to her. Abused by her father and his friends. When George was questioned about her claims, he stated he had been delving into the mystery of love and the universe. That's a sick motherfucker. At the Soden House, and the acts of which he was accused were unclear like a dream. George's son, Steve, a retired Los Angeles Police Department cop, now believes that his father was a prolific serial killer. Yeah. But he believed him to be the murderer of the Black Dahlia.
That's crazy.
In the basement of the home, and the cadaver dogs had indicated the presence of human remains.
That's crazy.
So we do know the Soden House was bugged by the suspicious LAPD when George lived there. Because he was recorded saying, supposedly I killed the Black Dahlia.
Killed it?
Yeah, suppose I did killed it.
Oh, the Black. That's what it sounded like you said, right?
Yeah, it did. it's pretty much saying, suppose I did kill the Black Dahlia. Mm. They couldn't prove it now. They can't talk to my secretary anymore because she's dead.
Oh my gosh.
All right. So
imagine how many people have taken stuff like that to their graves. Stuff that, you know, would get somebody in big trouble.
I'm sure there's still, like, people. Mm. There's, like, a lot of cold cases. It's crazy how many cold cases there are. And true. How many motherfuckers are possibly going to get away with it, you know, as the years are going by. And mm-hmm. then people are dropping dead and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
I know.
All right. So, the Los Feliz Murder House. Mid-house. All right. While the evil events at Soden House are shrouded in mystery and rumor, there is no doubt as to what happened at 2475 Glendower Place on the evening of December 6, 1959. It's what happened to the Spanish Colonial Revival Mansion in the following decades that continues to baffle. So on that December night, Dr. Harold Perelson, a typically mild-mannered cardiologist, killed his sleeping wife, Lillian, with a hammer.
Jeez.
Then went into the room of his 18-year-old daughter, Judy, and began to beat her with a hammer as well.
Jeez.
Judy's screams of, "Don't kill me," awoke her 11-year-old sister, Debbie, who ran to the hall to see what was wrong. Her father appeared, telling her, "Go back to bed. This is a nightmare." So according to the LA Times, Judy fled to the home of Marshall Ross, who went to the Perelson home, there to meet Dr. Perelson in a state of agitation. Ross told him to lie down. When the police arrived, Dr. Perelson was dead of an overdose.
Jeez.
Beside his wife's bed in the master bedroom. So on the bedstand next to the bodies was a copy of Dante's Divine Comedy, open to the Canto 1, reading, "Midway upon the journey of our life, I found myself within a forest dark, for the straightforward pathway had been lost." The Perelson children never returned to the home. Legend has it that another family lived in the mansion briefly, fleeing on the anniversary of Lillian's death, leaving their Christmas presents unopened on a kitchen table. Ooh, somebody must have got some really, really good my bad.
Yeah.
So, all right, they left all that shit behind. And so in 1960, the estate was bought by Emily and Julian Enrique. Bafflingly, the family never moved in or fixed it up, using it only as a place to store things and a place for their cats. This led to strange rumors of the untouched murder house. It drew constant trespassers and became an unsightly headache for our neighbors. In 1994, Rudy Enrique, who had inherited the house in 1994, told the LA Times, "The only spooky thing there is me." People say to tell people to say their prayers every morning and evening, and they'll be okay. Rudy died in 2015.
Wow.
The home was bought by attorney Lisa Bloom and her husband for, guess how much, Cass?
$50.
In 2016?
Oh, I thought we were still talking about back in the day.
Oh, no. This is, we're talking modern now. Think about it. A mansion in, like, Hollywood. Or Hollywood area.
I don't know. Los Angeles. Probably, like, $3
million? Ooh, you're close.
Okay.
I'll go a little lower.
$2 million? One?
So two, yeah, okay, you want to answer?
Yeah, say it. Are we going to play this all day?
$2.280 million.
I was pretty fucking close.
Yeah, you were, yeah. In 2016, it is being renovated now, and one hopes exorcised of any ghosts that reside therein.
True.
So, as I mentioned, like Ghost Adventures, I think I mentioned in the beginning of this pod, Ghost Adventures went there. I think they're doing like they released one episode recently. It's a two-parter episode. So they're investigating this murder house. And you know how Zach Bagans does it, being overly dramatic. And I think he threw a kick at one of his dudes, Billy.
Did he really?
Yeah, he threw a kick and he said that, like, "Hey, I didn't realize this shit." And then Aaron's acting fucking crazy. Mm-hmm. They're saying that they were feeling all this cold air around them. Mm-hmm. This was before they even got to the third floor. I think they were, like, midway up in the second floor. And then they send I think it's, like, a Kevin. What's the dude's name? From Entertainment Tonight is Kevin.
Entertainment Tonight.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Anyway, they send some celebrity dude in.
I haven't watched Entertainment Tonight in a long fucking time.
and he starts freaking out like them. So, and that's the furthest I got in the episode. It was like, it was almost done. So, anyway, point where I was getting at. So, Ghost Adventures is crazy.
True story.
Yeah.
True story.
All right. So, the LaBianca house. All right. Getting ready to end this tour right here.
Okay.
So, the LaBianca house is this is the most famous murder. On the evening of August 10th, 1969, Rosemary and Lino LaBianca were at their Spanish-style mansion at 3301 Waverly Drive, which had been owned by Lino's family since 1940. The Sharon Tate murders the night before had gripped the Los Angeles in a vice of fear.
Yeah, that was crazy, dude. That's fucking crazy.
Yeah. Just like this is an overshot of the neighborhood. It looks like a pretty yeah. nice neighborhood. And
yeah.
Like, you don't think any violence would happen there.
Right.
The killers are about to strike again. On the order of Charles Manson, Tex Watson, Patricia Krenwinkel, and Leslie Van Houten burst into the house, which had been selected solely because it was posh. What the fuck does posh mean?
I'm not sure.
Like boring, like or posh would be like, hold on, let's do it quick.
Because it was like fancy or like, I don't know.
Oh, elegant or stylishly luxurious.
You're okay. Welcome.
Ah, yeah, okay. That was my second guess.
Sure was.
Tex told Pat and I to go into the kitchen and get the knives. And we took Miss LaBianca into the room and put a pillowcase over her head.
Wow.
I wrapped a lamp cord around her head and had to hold the pillowcase on her head. I went to hold her down.
People are sick.
Jeez, man. Colin.
Sick.
Rosemary was then stabbed 14 times.
Ugh.
According to LA Times, the crime scene was nightmarish.
I'm sure. No shit.
Miss LaBianca's body, clad in a peignoir noir and bathrobe, was found on the floor of the master bedroom. A pillowcase was pulled over her head and tied loosely with an electrical cord from a lamp. The body of her 44-year-old husband, the owner of four Los Angeles supermarkets, was discovered on the floor beside the living room couch. He was wearing pajamas, and his head had also been covered by a pillowcase held in place by a knotted lamp cord. He had been stabbed 12 times.
Jeez.
A carving fork was stuck in his abdomen.
Oh, my God.
A kitchen knife was in his throat.
Jeez.
And the word war had been cut on his abdomen. What the fuck?
I know.
The LaBianca heirs eventually sold the cursed home. It is now a private residence, deceptively lovely and light, much like the neighborhood it lives in. Whew. Boy, crazy, crazy neighborhood.
Sad face.
Scary. Scary.
It's just sad. Like, it's just sad.
It is. That's crazy.
Bad times right there.
Man. Well, it's like things are sort of lighter nowadays. I mean, they're still crazy.
No, they're not.
One of my kids and the other is still crazy shit that happens.
There is.
But,
people shooting kids at schools.
Yeah.
For no fucking reason.
Right.
Like... That's just bad.
Boy.
Things are not lighter now. You just don't watch that much news. If you're watching the news like some people do, I'm sure you would hear a lot more horrible things.
It seems like a lot of bad stuff is on the news more than the good things.
That's why I don't watch the news.
Easy.
Exactly.
All right.
It's sad.
All right, I think that's the end of this episode right here. Some tales from the Los Feliz neighborhood in Los Angeles. Ghostly. Well, sort of ghostly.
It is ghostly.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But anyway, if you guys enjoyed that episode, you know what to do. Subscribe to the podcast, wherever podcast platform you're listening to. And also leave a rating, preferably a 5-star review. Thank you. Thank you. That would bring us up on the charts and make people, other people notice this podcast and start listening to it as well. Share, share, share. So it gets, we're going to get viral, everybody. Viral low. No, I'm just kidding. All right. So any final thoughts, Cassie?
No, the final thought is if you want to get viral, we got to start making it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Oh!
Oops.
Kitties.
Kitty, kitty.
Kitty's nails hurty.
Kitty nails, nails. All right. Okay, Cass, I think we're going to wrap this one up.
Alrighty then.
Love, I love it. Oh, shit. Oh, yeah. Wait, I didn't even know you were about to. Did you want to do a sound effect? Or,
yeah, go ahead.
I don't know what.
Just pick one. Do a blind.
Blind.
Close your eyes.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Dork. My God.
Shit. It's not working.
Batteries are dead.
Yeah. No.
Pick a different thing to hit.
Okay.
That works.
I guess that's appropriate.
Oh, my God.
What the fuck, man?
Alrighty, then.
Love, peace, and chicken grease. Bye. All right.